and frowns. Yes. I straighten my back and sit up as tall as I can manage.
It doesn't bother you how possessive he is? He tells you who you can be friends with.
It does bother me, but...
You let him do it.
Did you come all the way to Seattle to remind me that Hardin is controlling? Zed opens his mouth to speak, but closes it. What? I push him.
He has a claim on you, and I'm worried about you. You seem so stressed out.
I sigh in defeat. I am stressed. Too stressed. But fighting with Zed isn't going to help anything. It's only intensifying my frustration. I'm not going to make excuses for him, but you don't know anything about our relationship. You don't see how he is with me. You don't understand him the way that I do. I push my plate away and notice that the couple at the next table over has turned their attention to us. Lowering my voice, I say, I don't want to fight with you, Zed. I'm exhausted, and I was really looking forward to spending this time with you. He leans back in his chair.
I'm being such a jerk, aren't I?
He says with sad eyes.
I'm sorry, Tessa. I would blame the drive, but that's not an excuse. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I didn't mean to snap at you. I don't know what's gotten into me. My period is due any day now. That must be why I'm so on edge.
It's my fault, really.
He reaches across the table and squeezes my hand. Tension still fills the air, and I can't stop thinking of Hardin, but I'd like to have a nice time, so I ask, how is everything else going? Zed dives into stories about his family and how warm Florida was the last time he visited. The conversation between us reverts to its normal, easy, meandering flow, and the tension evaporates, allowing me to finish my meal. After we're done eating and are heading to the exit, Zed asks,
Do you have more plans for the night?
Yes, I'm going to Christian's Jazz Club. It just opened.
Christian?
Zed questions. Oh, my boss. That's who I'm staying with. His brow rises.
You're staying with your boss?
Yes, but he went to college with Hardin's father, and he's a longtime friend of Ken and Karen, I explain. It hasn't occurred to me that Zed doesn't know any of the details about my life. Although he picked me up after Christian's surprise engagement party for Kimberly, he doesn't know anything about them.
Oh, so that's how you got a paid internship then.
Ouch. Yes, I admit.
Well, it's awesome either way.
Thanks. I stare out the window and pull my cell phone from my purse. Still nothing. What else do you plan on doing while you're in Seattle? I ask in the middle of trying to explain which roads to take to get us to Christian and Kimberly's house. I give up after a few minutes and type the address into my phone. The screen freezes, and the power shuts off twice before the device finally cooperates.
I'm not sure. I'm going to see what my friends are up to. Maybe we could meet up later again tonight, or before I leave on Saturday?
That would be cool. I'll let you know, I say.
When will Hardin be here?
The venomous undertone to his question doesn't go unnoticed. I glance at my phone again, this time out of habit. I'm not sure. Maybe tonight.
Are you guys together right now? I know we said we wouldn't talk about it anymore, but I'm confused.
So am I admit. We've been putting some space between us lately.
Is that working?
Yes. Until the last few days when Hardin started to pull away from me.
That's good, then.
I have to know what thought is running through his mind. I can see it churning behind his eyes. What?
Nothing. You don't want to hear it.
Yes, I do. I know I'll regret it, but that doesn't stop my curiosity.
I just don't see any space. You're in Seattle, staying with friends of his family, one of whom is also your boss. Even from miles away, he's controlling you, trying to end the few friendships that you have. And when he's not doing that, he's coming to Seattle to visit. That doesn't seem like much space to me.
I haven't thought about my living arrangement from that perspective until now. Is that another reason why Hardin sabotaged my getting an apartment? So that if I still decided to go to Seattle, I could be under the watchful eyes of his family's friends? I shake my head to escape the thought. It's working for us. I know it doesn't make sense to you, but it's working for us. I know...
He tried to pay me off to stay away from you.
Zed interjects. What?
Yeah. He was threatening me, and he told me to make him an offer. He told me to find another whore on campus to toy with.
Whore? Zed shrugs nonchalantly.
He said that no one else will ever have you, and he was awfully proud of himself that you stuck around even after he told you about sleeping with Molly after the two of you had started hanging out.
The mention of Hardin and Molly stings, Zed knew it would, and that's exactly why he said it. We've already dealt with that. I don't want to talk about Hardin and Molly, I say through gritted teeth.
I just want you to know what you're dealing with. He's not the same person when you're not around.
That's not a bad thing, I retort, fighting back. You don't know him. I'm relieved when we pull onto the access road and into the outskirts of the city, signaling that we're less than 5 minutes away from Christian's place. The sooner this car ride is over, the better.
You don't either, not really,
he says.
You spend all of your time fighting with him.
What's your goal here, Zed? I ask. I hate the direction our conversation has taken, but I don't know how to bring it back to neutral territory.
Nothing. I just thought that after all this time and all the shit he puts you through, you'd see the truth.
A thought strikes me. Did you tell him you were coming here?
No.
You're not fighting fair here, I say, calling him out.
Neither is he.
He sighs, desperately trying to keep his voice down.
Look, I know you'll defend him until you're blue in the face, but you can't blame me for wanting to have what he has. I want to be the one you're defending. I want to be the one that you trust, even though you shouldn't. I'm always there for you when he isn't.
He rubs his hand over his facial hair and takes another breath.
I'm not fighting fair, but neither is he. He hasn't from the beginning. Sometimes I swear the only reason he's so attached to you is because he knows that I have feelings for you, too.
This is exactly why Zed and I will never be able to have a friendship. Regardless of his sweetness and understanding, it will never work. He hasn't given up, and I suppose there's honor in that. However, I can't give him what he wants from me, and I don't want to feel like I have to explain my relationship with Hardin every time I see him. He's been there for me, it's true, but only because I allowed him to be. I say, I don't know if I have enough left of me to give to you, even as a friend. Zed looks over at me with an even expression.
That's because he's drained you.
I stay silent and stare out the window at the pine trees lining the road. I don't like the tension I'm feeling right now, and I'm fighting back some tears when I hear Zed mutter,
I didn't want tonight to end up this way. Now you'll probably never want to see me again.
I point out the window. It's this driveway. An awkward and tense silence fills the cab of the truck until the massive house comes into view. When I look over at him, Zed is staring wide-eyed at Christian's place.
This is even bigger than the other house, the one I picked you up from before,
he points out, trying to ease the tension. In an effort to do the same, I begin to tell him about the gym, the spacious kitchen, the way Christian can control what's going on in parts of the house with his iPhone. And then my heart leaps into my throat. Hardin's car is parked just behind Kimberly's sleek Audi. Zed spots it at the same time that I do, but he doesn't appear to be affected by it. I can feel the color draining from my face as I say, I better get inside. As we park, Zed says,
Again, I'm sorry, Tessa. Please don't go inside upset with me. You have enough going on. I shouldn't have made you feel any worse.
He offers to come inside to be sure everything is okay, but I brush it off. I know Hardin will be pissed, beyond pissed, but I'm the one who created this mess, so I need to be held responsible for cleaning it up. It's okay, I reassure him with a fake smile, and climb out of his truck with a promise to text him when I can. I'm aware of my slow strides as I walk to the door, but I don't make an effort to move faster. I'm trying to go over what I should say, whether or not I should be angry with Hardin or apologize for seeing Zed again when the door opens. Hardin steps out wearing his dark blue jeans and a plain black t-shirt. Despite the fact that it has only been 2 days since I last saw him, my pulse quickens and I ache to be closer to him. I've missed him so much in the past few days that we've been apart. His face is set in stone and his icy gaze follows Zed's old truck as it disappears from view. Hardin, I...
Get inside.
He scolds me. Don't tell, I begin.
It's cold. Come inside.
Hardin's eyes are blazing, and the heat in them keeps me from arguing. He surprises me by gently resting his hand on the small of my back as he leads me inside the house, past where Kimberly and Smith are playing some card game in the living room, and into my bedroom without a word. Calmly, he closes the door behind him and turns the lock. Then he looks down at me, and my heart nearly bursts when he asks,
Why?
Hardin, nothing happened, I swear. He said there was a change of plans, and I was so relieved because I thought he wasn't coming. But instead he said that he'd arrived a day early and wanted to grab dinner. I shrug, partly to calm myself down. I didn't know how to say no.
You never do,
he spits, holding my gaze. I know you went to his apartment yesterday. Why didn't you tell me?
Because you didn't need to know.
His breathing is harsh, barely controlled. You don't get to decide what I need to know, I challenge him. You can't keep things from me. I know about your mother's wedding, too, I blurt.
I knew how you would react.
He throws his hands up, trying to defend himself. I roll my eyes, stomping toward him. Bullshit. He doesn't even flinch. The veins in his arms are visible under the rare spots of white skin, soft blue laced with the black ink. His fists are tightly balled.
One thing at a time.
I will be friends with who I want to be friends with, and you won't keep going behind my back, acting like a child throwing a damn temper tantrum, I warn him.
You said you wouldn't go near him again.
I know. I didn't get it before, but after spending time with him today, I made my own choice not to be friends with him. It's not because of you. I can see him flinch in surprise a little at that, but he maintains his dark intensity.
Why is that?
I look away, a little ashamed. Because I know he's a trigger for you, and I shouldn't keep pushing you by seeing him. I know how much it would hurt me if you saw Molly, or any other female for that matter. That being said, you don't get to control my friendships, but I can't lie and say that I wouldn't feel the same way if I were you. He crosses his arms and breathes out roughly.
Why now? What did he do to make you suddenly change your mind?
Nothing. He didn't do anything to me. I just shouldn't have taken this long to get it. We have to be equals. Neither of us can hold the power. I can tell by the glow in his green eyes that he wants to say more, but instead he just nods.
Come here.
He opens his arms for me the way he always does, and I'm quick to wrap myself in them. How did you know that I was with him? I press my cheek against his chest. His minty scent invades my senses, pushing out all thoughts of Zed.
Kimberly told me,
he says into my hair. I frown. She really doesn't know how to keep her mouth shut.
You weren't going to tell me?
His thumb presses under my chin and lifts my head up. Yes, I was, but I'd rather have told you myself. I suppose that I'm grateful for Kimberly's honesty. It's hypocritical of me to only want her to be honest with me and not with Hardin. Why didn't you come find us? I ask. I assumed that if he knew that I was with Zed, that's exactly what he would have done.
Because,
he breathes, staring into my eyes.
You kept going on about the cycle, and I wanted to break it.
My heart swells at his honest and thoughtful answer. He really is trying, and it means so much to me.
I'm still mad,
he adds. I know. I touch his cheek with my fingertips, and his arms tighten around me. I'm pissed, too. You didn't tell me about the wedding, and I want to know why.
Not tonight,
he warns. Yes, tonight. You got to say your piece about Zed, and now it's my turn.
Tessa.
His lips compress into a hard line. Hardin.
You're infuriating.
He releases me and paces across the floor, putting a distance between us that I can't stand. So are you, I fire back, following his movements to get closer to him.
I don't want to talk about the fucking wedding right now. I'm already livid and barely controlling myself as it is. Don't push me, okay?
Fine, I say loudly, but give in. Not because I'm afraid of what he'll say, but because I just spent 2.5 hours with Zed, and I know Hardin's anger is only serving to mask the anxiety and pain I've caused him by doing so. Chapter 114. Tessa. I pull open my dresser drawer and dig out clean panties and a matching bra. I'm going to go shower. Kimberly wants to leave at 8, and it's already 7, I tell Hardin, who's sitting on the edge of my bed with his elbows resting on his knees.
You're still going?
He scoffs. Yes, I told you before, remember? That was the whole reason you wanted to come here, so I didn't have to go alone.
That's not the only reason I came,
he says defensively. I raise a speculative brow at him, and he rolls his eyes.
I didn't say it's not a reason, but it's not the only one.
You still want to come, right? I ask, dangling my underwear suggestively. This is rewarded with a slight smirk.
No, I never wanted to come, but But if you're going, so am I.
I give him a wide smile, but when I leave the room, he doesn't follow, which surprises me. I find myself kind of wishing he would this time. I don't know where we stand at the moment. I know he's pissed about Zed, and I'm upset that he's hiding things from me again. But overall, I'm thrilled that he's here, and I don't want to waste our time fighting. I wrap a towel around my hair since I don't have the time to wash and dry it before we leave. The hot water relieves some of the tension in my shoulders and back, but doesn't do much to clear my head. I need to work myself into a better mood within the hour. Harden will be brooding all night, I'm sure. I want us to have a nice time out with Kimberly and Christian. I don't want any awkward silence or public fighting. I want us to get along, and I want to be in a happy mood. Both of us. I haven't had a Seattle nightlife experience since I moved here, and I want my first to be as fun as possible. My guilt regarding Zed refuses to subside, but I'm relieved when my irritation and irrational thoughts slide down the drain along with the scalding water and suds of soap. The moment I turn off the shower, Harden knocks at the door. I wrap a towel around myself and take a deep breath before answering. "I'll be ready in 10 minutes. I need to do something with my hair," I say, and when I look into the mirror, there's Harden standing behind me. He squints at the frizzy mess on my head.
"What's wrong with it now?"
"It's out of control," I laugh. "It won't take long."
"You're wearing that?"
He eyes the uncomfortable black dress which is hanging on the shower curtain since I was trying to de-wrinkle it a bit. The last time I wore it, at the family vacation, it led to a disastrous night. Well, week. "Yes, Kimberly said there's a dress code."
"What kind of dress code?"
Harden looks down to his stained jeans and black t-shirt. I shrug and smile to myself, imagining Kimberly telling Harden to change his outfit.
"I'm not changing,"
he tells me, and I shrug again. Harden's eyes don't leave my reflection in the mirror the entire time that I put on my makeup and wrestle with a flat iron in my hair. The steam from the shower has made it curl in a terrible way. There's just no hope for it. I end up pulling it back into a low bun. At least my makeup actually looks really good, an even exchange for such a bad hair day. "Are you staying until Sunday?" I ask him as I put on my underwear and step into my dress. I want to make sure the tension between us is under control, and we don't spend the entire night arguing.
"Yes. Why?"
Harden coolly responds. "I was thinking that instead of spending Friday night here in Seattle, we could go back and I could see Landon and Karen. Your father, too."
"What about yours?"
"Oh, yeah. I had momentarily forgotten about my father staying with Harden. I've been trying really hard not to think about that situation until you can tell me more about it."
"I don't know if it's a good idea."
"Why not?" I ask. "I miss Landon so much." Harden rubs the back of his neck with his hand.
"I don't know. All this shit with Steph and Zed."
"Harden, I'm not going to see Zed again. And unless Steph shows up at the apartment or your father's house, I won't be seeing her either."
"I still don't think you should go."
"You have to lighten up a little bit," I sigh, resetting the bun in my hair.
"Lighten up?"
he says derisively, as if the idea has never occurred to him. "Yes, lighten up. You can't control everything." His head snaps up.
"I can't control everything? This is coming from you, of all people?"
I laugh. "I'm just saying. I'm giving you the Zed thing because I know it's wrong, but you can't keep me from the entire town because you're worried that I might see him or some unpleasant girl."
"Are you done?"
Harden asks, leaning against the sink. "With the argument or my hair?" I smirk at him.
"You're annoying."
He smiles back at me and slaps my behind as I move around him to exit the bathroom. I'm glad he's being somewhat playful. That bodes well for the night. As we cross the hallway to my room, Christian calls up from the living room.
"Harden, you still here? You coming to listen to some jazz? It's not heavy metal or whatever, but..."
I don't hear the rest of his words because I'm busy laughing at the impromptu Christian Vance impersonation Harden is doing. Pushing his chest lightly, I say, "Go see him. I'll be right out." Back in my room, I grab my purse and check my cell phone. I have got to call my mother soon. I keep putting it off and she won't stop calling. I have a message from Zed as well.
"Please don't be upset with me about tonight. I was a jerk, and I didn't mean to be. Sorry."
I delete the message and stick my phone back into my purse. My friendship with Zed has to end now. I've been leading him on for too long, and every time I say goodbye to him, I end up backtracking and make the situation worse by seeing him again. It's not fair to him or to Harden. Harden and I have enough problems as it is. It bothers me as a woman that Harden tries to forbid me from seeing Zed, but I can't deny that I'm being a huge hypocrite if I continue hanging out with him. I would never want Harden to be friends with Molly and spend time with her alone. The thought itself makes me nauseous. Zed has made his feelings for me very clear, and it's not fair to anyone if I let the situation with him linger and tacitly encourage him. Zed is kind to me, and he's been there for me a lot, but I hate the way that I always feel like I have to explain myself to him and defend my relationship. Enjoying the fantasy of a great night out with my guy, I descend the stairs, and am surprised that when I enter the living room, Harden is standing there with his hands in his hair, looking exasperated.
"Hell no,"
he huffs, backing away from Christian.
"Bloodstained jeans and that dirty shirt aren't appropriate attire in the club, regardless of your connections to the owner,"
Christian says, pushing some sort of black fabric to Harden's chest.
"I'm not going then,"
Harden pouts, letting the garment fall to the floor at Christian's feet.
"Don't be a baby. Just put the damn shirt on." "If I wear the shirt, I'm keeping the jeans on,"
Harden says, negotiating and looking to me for support.
"Didn't you bring any clothes that don't have blood on them?"
Christian smiles, then bends down to pick up the shirt. "You can wear your black jeans, Harden," I suggest, in an effort to mediate between the two men.
"Fine. Give me the fucking shirt, then."
Harden snatches the shirt from Christian's hands and lifts his middle finger to him as he stalks down the hallway.
"Maybe a haircut, too,"
Christian shouts after him teasingly, and I can't help but laugh. "Oh, would you leave him alone already? I won't stop him from giving you a black eye," Kimberly jokes.
"Yeah, yeah."
Christian pulls her into his arms and kisses her mouth. I turn away just as the doorbell rings. "That will be Lillian," Kim announces while wiggling out of Christian's embrace. Harden walks out into the living room as Lillian comes through the front door.
"Why is she here?"
he groans. He's put on the black button-down shirt, which doesn't look bad on him. "Don't be mean. She babysits Smith, and she's your friend, remember?" I say. My first impression of Lillian wasn't a good one, but I've grown to like the girl, even though I haven't seen her since we got home from the vacation from hell.
"No, she's not."
"Tessa! Harden!" Lillian exclaims, her bright blue eyes beaming and her smile bright. I'm thankful that she's not wearing the same dress I am like she was the first time I met her at the restaurant in Sand Point. "Hey," I smile back, and Harden curtly nods. "You look great," she compliments, looking me up and down. "Thanks, so do you." She's dressed in a simple cardigan and khaki pants.
"Okay, if both of you are done,"
Harden complains. "Nice to see you too, Harden." Lillian rolls her eyes at him, and he slightly softens, offering her a half-smile. Meanwhile, Kimberly is rushing around the living room, putting on her heels and checking her makeup in the large mirror above the couch. Smith is upstairs. "We shouldn't be gone any later than midnight."
"Ready, love?"
Christian asks her, and when she nods yes, he spreads his arms wide and gestures to the door.
"We're driving separately,"
Harden announces.
"Why? We have a driver for tonight,"
Christian says.
"I want to drive myself in case we want to leave."
Christian shrugs.
"Suit yourself."
As we head out, I get a better look at Harden's shirt, which is not unlike the one he usually wears when he's forced to dress up. The difference here, however, is that this shirt is covered with a faint, barely noticeable animal print.
"Don't say a word,"
Harden warns me when he notices me staring. "I'm not." I bite my lip and he groans.
"It's hideous,"
he says, and I giggle the entire way to the car. The jazz club is centrally located in downtown Seattle. The streets are full of people as if it were a Saturday night instead of Wednesday. We wait inside Harden's car until a sleek black town car pulls up next to us, and Kimberly and Christian step out.
"Rich bastard,"
Harden says, squeezing my thigh before we get out ourselves. With a brisk smile, the bald bouncer unhooks the velvet rope from the silver stand and lets us by. Moments later, Kimberly is leading us through the dark club, showing off various features of the place, while Christian wanders off by himself. Blocks of gray stone serve as tables, and there are groups of black couches accented with white cushions. The only color in the entire club comes from the bouquets of red roses that are sitting atop each massive stone. The soft music playing through the club is relaxing yet stimulating at the same time.
Fancy.
Harden rolls his eyes. He looks painfully beautiful under the dim lights. Christian's printed button-down shirt paired with the black jeans make for a deadly attack on my libido.
It's nice, right?
Kimberly turns around, beaming.
Sure, sure.
Harden replies. The moment we get near the crowded tables, Harden's arm wraps around my hips, pulling me closer to him as we walk.
Christian is in the VIP section. We have it to ourselves,
Kimberly informs us. We walk to the back of the club, and a satin curtain is pulled open to reveal a moderate-sized space with more black curtains serving as walls. Four couches form the perimeter of the room, and a large stone rests in the center, covered with bottles of alcohol, a bowl of ice, and various finger foods. I'm so distracted, I almost miss seeing Max sitting on one of the couches across from Christian. Great. Max rubs me the wrong way, and I know Harden doesn't care for him either. Harden's arm tightens around me again, and he shoots a glare toward Christian. Kimberly smiles, ever the perfect hostess.
Nice to see you again, Max.
Max grins.
You too, dear.
He takes her hand in his and lifts it to his lips. Excuse me. A woman's voice sounds behind me. Harden and I step to the side, and Sasha prances through the small space. Her intimidating height and barely-there white dress help her claim the entire room.
Great,
Harden says, echoing my thought from seconds ago. He's about as happy to see her as I am to see Max.
Sasha?
Kimberly tries to appear pleased to see the woman, but fails. One of the flaws of Kim's genuine openness and honesty is that it's hard for her to hide her emotions. Sasha smiles warmly at her and takes a seat on the couch next to Max. His dark eyes meet mine as if he's asking me for permission to sit with his mistress. I look away as Harden guides me to the couch directly across from them. Kimberly takes a seat on Christian's lap and leans forward to grab a bottle of champagne.
What do you think of the place, Teresa?
Max asks with his smooth, heavy accent. I stutter at the use of my full name. It's nice.
Would you two like some champagne?
Kimberly offers. Harden answers for me.
I wouldn't, but Tessa would.
I lean into his shoulder. If you aren't drinking, I probably shouldn't either.
Go ahead. I don't mind. I just don't want any.
I smile at Kim. I'm okay. Thank you, though. Harden frowns and takes a full glass from the table.
You should have some. You've had a long day.
You only want me to drink so I don't ask you questions, I whisper, rolling my eyes as I do so.
No.
He smiles, amused.
I just want you to have a nice time out. That's what you wanted, right?
I don't have to drink to have a nice time. When I glance around the room, I can see that none of our company is paying any attention to our conversation.
I never said that you did. I'm only saying your friend is offering you free champagne that probably costs more than your entire outfit and mine put together.
His fingertips dance along the nape of my neck.
So why not enjoy a glass?
Good point. I lean into him again, and he hands me the long-stemmed glass. But I'm only having one, I say. 30 minutes later, I've just polished off my second glass, and I'm contemplating the third in an attempt to not feel uncomfortable while I watch Sasha parading around the small space. She claims she just wants to dance, but if that were truly the case, she could go out to the public area of the club and dance there. Attention whore. I cover my mouth as if I've said the words out loud.
What?
Harden, I can see, is bored. Very bored. I can tell by the way he's staring at the black curtain and his hand is dragging lazily up and down my back. I shake my head in a silent response. I shouldn't be thinking those things about the woman when I don't even know her. All I know about her is that she's sleeping with a married man. That's probably enough to know. I can't help but dislike her.
Can we go now?
Harden whispers into my neck and brings his other hand to my thigh. Just a little longer, I say to him. I'm not necessarily bored, but I would rather be spending one-on-one time with Harden than avoiding eye contact with Sasha or her nearly exposed underwear. Tessa, come dance? Kimberly suggests, and Harden tenses. My thoughts flash back to the last time I went out to a nightclub with Kimberly. I danced with a guy just to spite Harden, even though he was miles away. I was so heartbroken then, so sad that I could barely think straight. That guy ended up kissing me, and I ended up completely molesting Harden in my hotel room after he found Trevor there. It was a huge misunderstanding, but when I think back, the night ended pretty well for me. "I don't really dance, remember?" I say. "Well, come do a lap or something," she smiles. "You look like you're falling asleep." "Okay, a lap," I agree, and rise to my feet. "Are you coming?" I ask Harden, who shakes his head.
"She'll be fine. We'll only be gone a minute,"
Kimberly assures him. He doesn't look pleased about her stealing me away, but doesn't try to stop her. He's trying to show me that he can lighten up, and I love him for it.
"If you lose her, don't bother coming back," he says.
Kimberly bursts into laughter and drags me through the curtains and into the crowded club.
Chapter 115. Harden. Max sidles up to me and asks, "Where do you suppose she took Teresa off to?" "Tessa," I correct him. How the fuck does he even know her name is Teresa? Okay, maybe it's a little obvious that's her full name, but I don't like his saying it. "Tessa," he smiles, and takes a long sip of champagne. "She's a lovely girl." I reach for a bottled water from the table and ignore his prodding. I have no interest in talking to the man. I should have gone with Tessa and Kimberly wherever they went. I try to show Tessa that I can lighten up, and this is where it gets me. Sitting next to this guy in a club with shitty music. "I'll be back in a second. The band just arrived," Christian informs us. He tucks his cell phone into his dress slacks and wanders off. Max stands and follows him, giving his date instructions to enjoy herself, to have more champagne. They aren't seriously leaving me alone in here with this chick.
"Looks like it's just us two,"
this Stacy whomever chick says to me, confirming that yes, that's exactly what they just did. I spin the plastic cap of a water bottle across the stone table.
"So, what do you think of the place? Max says it's been packed every night since the opening."
She smiles at me. I pretend not to notice when she tugs at the bottom of her tiny dress to expose her cleavage, or lack thereof. "It only opened a few days ago. Of course it's been packed."
"Even so, it's a nice place."
She uncrosses her legs and crosses them again. Could she be any more desperate? At this point, I can't even tell if she's actually trying to come on to me, or if she's just so accustomed to being a whore that it's all automatic. She leans across the table between us.
"Do you want to dance? There's room in here."
Her long fingernails brush against my sleeve, and I jerk away.
"Are you out of your fucking mind?"
I move to the other end of the couch. This time last year, I would have taken her desperate ass into the bathroom and fucked her brains out. Now the thought makes me want to vomit on her white dress.
"What? I only asked to dance."
"Maybe dance with your married boyfriend,"
I snap, and reach to push the curtain back, hoping to see Tessa.
"Don't be so quick to judge me. You don't even know me."
"I know enough."
"Yeah, well, I know some stuff about you, too. So if I were you, I'd watch it."
"Do you now?"
I laugh. She narrows her eyes at me, trying to intimidate me, I'm sure.
"Yes, I do."
"If you knew shit about me, you would know better than to be threatening me right now,"
I warn her. She lifts a champagne flute and gives me a little salute.
"You're exactly like they say."
Which is my cue to leave. I push through the curtains to go find Tessa, so we can get the hell out of here.
Exactly like who says. Who does she think she is?
Christian is lucky that I promised Tessa a nice night. Otherwise, Max would have to answer for his whore's mouth. I circle the club in search of Tessa's sparkling dress and Kimberly's bright blonde hair. I'm thankful that this is not the type of place where everyone is swaying around on a dance floor. Most of the patrons are seated at tables,
making my search that much easier. Finally, I find them standing at the main bar, talking to Christian, Max, and some other guy. Tessa's back is toward me, but I can tell by her posture that she's nervous. Seconds later, another guy joins them, and as I get closer, the first man starts to look more and more familiar to me.
Harden, there you are!
Kimberly reaches out her arm to touch my shoulder, but I dodge her and move to Tessa. When she turns to me, her blue-grey eyes are wary as they lead my gaze to the guest.
Harden, this is my teacher from World Religion, Professor Soto,
she says, smiling politely.
Are you fucking kidding me? Does everyone end up making their way to Seattle?
Jonah, he corrects her. He pushes his hand into the space between us for a handshake that I'm too thrown off to deny. Chapter 116. Harden. Tessa's professor smiles, checking her out fairly subtly as he does so, but I see it clearly. Nice to see you again, he says, but I can't tell if he's talking to me or Tessa, really, the way he moves about to the music.
Professor Soto lives in Seattle now, Tessa informs me.
Convenient, I say under my breath.
Tessa hears me and gently nudges me with her elbow, and I wrap my arm around her waist. Jonah's eyes briefly note where I've placed my arm, then move back up to her face.
She's taken, Dick.
Yeah, I transferred to the Seattle campus a couple weeks ago. I applied for a job a few months back and finally got it. My band was ready for a move anyway, he tells us, with an attitude that indicates he thinks we should care about any of this.
The Reckless Few will be playing here tonight and every other night, if we can talk them into it, Christian boasts.
Jonah smiles and looks down at his boots.
I think that might be possible, he says, looking back up with a smile.
Finishing his drink in one motion, he says,
Well, we better get ready to play. Yeah, don't let us keep you.
Christian pats Soto on the back, and the professor turns to give Tessa one last smile before pushing through the small crowd toward the stage.
The band is incredible. Wait until you hear them.
Vance claps his hands together once before he wraps his arms around Kimberly and leads her to a table in front of the stage. I've already heard them. They are not incredible. Tessa turns to me with nervous eyes.
He's nice. Remember, he gave you a character witness when you were about to be expelled.
No, I don't recall anything about him, actually, except for the fact that he seems to like you and is mysteriously living in Seattle now, teaching at your fucking campus.
You heard him say that he applied there months ago, and he does not like me.
He does.
You think everyone likes me,
she fires back. She can't possibly be naive enough to assume that this guy has good intentions.
Shall we make a list, then? There's Zed, fucking Trevor, that dickhead of a waiter.
Who am I missing?
Oh, and now we can add your creepy professor, who was just eyeing you like you were dessert.
I look to where that dick is on the little bandstand, walking about with an attitude that's both self-important and fake casual.
Zed is the only person on that list that counts. Trevor is very sweet, and he never meant any harm. I'll probably never see Robert again, and Soto is not a stalker.
One word in that spiel doesn't sit well with me.
Probably. I obviously won't see him again. You're the one I'm with, okay?
She pushes one of her hands into mine, and I relax. I need to make sure I burned or flushed that damn waiter's phone number, just in case. I still think this asshole is a stalker. I nod toward the stage at the douchebag in his leather jacket. I may need to talk to my father, just to make sure he isn't as shady as I think he is.
Tessa would approach a lion with fucking kid gloves. She's no good at judging character. She proves my point when she beams up at me, smiling like an idiot because of the champagne running through her veins. She's actually here with me after all the shit I've put her through.
I thought this was a jazz club, but his band is more...
Tessa begins to try and take my mind off the seemingly endless list of men who want her affection. Shitty? I interrupt her. She swats my arm.
No, just not jazz music. They are more like the Fray, sort of.
The Fray? Don't go insulting your favorite band now. The only thing I remember about the professor's band is that they fucking suck. She bumps her shoulder against my arm.
And yours?
Not quite.
Don't act like you don't like them. I know you do.
She squeezes my hand, and I shake my head. Not denying it, really. But I'm not going to admit it, either. I stare back and forth between the wall and Tessa's tits while waiting for the godforsaken band to set up.
Can we just go now?
I ask.
One song.
Tessa's cheeks are flushed, and her eyes are wide and glossy. She takes another drink. Her hands run over her dress, tugging it down and up at once. Can I at least sit down? I nod toward the line of empty stools at the bar. I take Tessa's hand in my own and pull her to the bar. I sit on the last stool, closest to the wall and farthest from the crowd.
What are you having?
A young man with a goatee and a fake-ass Italian accent asks us. A glass of champagne and a water, I say, as Tessa moves to stand between my legs. I rest one hand on the small of her back, the beads of her dress rough against my palm.
We only sell champagne by the bottle, sir.
The bartender gives me an apologetic smile, as if he's sure I couldn't afford a bottle of his fucking champagne.
A bottle will be fine.
Vance's voice sounds next to me, and the bartender nods, looking back and forth between the two of us.
She'll have it chilled,
I cockily remark. The kid nods again and scurries away to fetch the bottle, Dick.
Stop babysitting us,
I tell Vance. Tessa scowls at me, but I ignore her. He rolls his eyes like the sarcastic twit he is.
I'm clearly not babysitting you. She's underage.
Yeah, yeah,
I say. Someone calls his name, and he pats my shoulder before walking off. A few moments later, the bartender pops a bottle of champagne open and pours the bubbling liquid into a glass for Tessa. She politely thanks him, and he responds with a smile even more artificial than his accent. His little pantomime of cool is killing me. She brings the glass to her lips and rests her back against my chest.
It's so good.
Just then, two men walk by and give her a quick glance. She notices. I know she does, because she leans further into me and lays her head against my shoulder.
There's Sasha,
she says, over the sound of Professor Stalker's guitar being tested on the sound equipment. The tall blonde is searching the room, either for her boyfriend or a random dude to nail.
Who cares?
I gently grip her elbow and turn her to face me.
I don't like her,
she quietly states.
No one does.
You don't?
She asks.
Is she insane?
Why would I?
I don't know.
Her eyes move to my mouth.
Because she's pretty.
So?
I don't know. I'm just being weird.
She shakes her head in an attempt to get rid of the resentment that is clear on her face.
Are you jealous, Teresa?
No,
she pouts. You shouldn't be. I open my legs further and pull her against me again. That's not what I want. I move my eyes to her nearly exposed chest. You are. I trace the line of her cleavage with my index finger, as if we aren't in a crowded club.
Only for my boobs,
she whispers the last word.
Obviously, I chuckle, teasing her.
I knew it.
Tessa pretends to be offended, but smiles over the rim of her glass. Yeah, well, now that the truth is out, you can let me fuck them, I say, much too loud.
Champagne spurts out of her mouth and onto my shirt and lap.
Sorry,
she squeals, reaching for the napkin bin on the bar. She dabs the napkin across this fucking horrendous monstrosity of a shirt, and then moves to wipe at my crotch. I grab her wrist and take the napkin from her. I wouldn't do that.
Oh.
Her flush spreads down her neckline. One of the band members makes their introduction into the microphone, and I try my best not to heave when the eardrum assault begins. Tessa watches intently as they roll from one song to another, and I continue to keep her glass full. I'm thankful for the way we're sitting. Well, the way I'm sitting. She's standing between my legs, her back toward me, but I can see her face when I slightly lean back against the bar behind me. The low red lighting in the place, the champagne, and her being, her, makes her glow. It's impossible not to watch her smile and stare at the stage. I can't even be jealous, because she's just that beautiful. As if she can read my mind, she turns around and gives me an eager smile. I love seeing her this way, so carefree, so young. I need to make her feel this way more often.
They are good, right?
She nods along to the slow yet edgy sound. I shrug. No. They aren't terrible, but they sure as hell aren't good.
Sure.
She exaggerates the word and turns back around. Moments later, her hips begin to sway along to the whining voice of the lead singer. Fuck. I move my hand down to the curve of her hip, and she backs into me, still moving. The tempo of the song speeds up, and Tessa does the same. Holy fuck. We've done a lot of shit. I've done a lot of shit. But I've never had anyone dance on me this way. I've had girls and even a few strippers give me a lap dance. But not like this. This is slow, intoxicating, and achingly fucking hot. My other hand moves to her other hip, and she turns slightly to place her glass on the bar top. With her hands empty, she gives me a salacious smile and looks back to the stage. She lifts up one hand and runs her small fingers through my hair and places the other hand on top of mine. Keep going, I beg.
You sure?
She tugs at the roots of my hair. It's hard to believe that this seductive girl, wearing a short black dress, swaying her hips and tugging my hair, is the same girl who spits her champagne when I talk about fucking her chest. She's such a turn-on. Yes, fuck, I breathe, and lift a hand up to the nape of her neck, bringing her ear to my mouth. Move against me. I squeeze her hip. Closer. She does just that. I'm thankful for my height as I sit on the bar stool, the perfect height for her ass to move against me, hitting the exact spot that aches for her. I pull my attention from her, only for a second, to scan our surroundings. I don't want anyone else watching her dance. You're so sexy right now, I say against the shell of her ear. Dancing this way, in public. For me and only me. I swear I hear her moan through the music, and that's all I can take. I turn her around and push my hand under her skirt.
Harden,
she groans when I slide her panties to the side. No one is paying any attention. Even if they were, they can't see, I assure her. I wouldn't be doing this if I thought anyone could possibly witness it. You liked putting on that show, didn't you? I say. She can't deny it. She's soaking. She doesn't respond. She only rests her head on my shoulder and pulls at the bottom of my shirt, fisting it in her hand like she normally would do our sheets. I pump in and out of her, trying to match the haunting melody of the song. Almost instantly, her legs are stiffening, and she's coming on my fingers. She hums, letting me know just how much pleasure I'm bringing her. She leans in further, her mouth sucking at the base of my neck. Her hips rock into me, keeping a steady beat with my fingers pumping in and out of her wet pussy. Her moans are drowned out by the music and the voices around us, and her nails could possibly be breaking the skin on my stomach.
"I'm going to,"
she groans into my neck. "I know, baby. Come for me. Right here, Tessa. Come," I gently persuade her. She nods, biting down on the tendon in my neck, and I feel my cock pulsing, pressing against the front of my jeans. All of her weight rests on me as she orgasms, and I hold her up. She's panting, absolutely flushing, glowing under the lights when she lifts her head.
"Car or bathroom?"
she asks when I bring my fingers to my lips, sucking her sweetness from them. "Car," I reply hastily, and she downs the last of her champagne. Vance can pay for that shit. I don't have time to hunt down the bartender. Tessa takes my hand and drags me toward the door. She's eager, and I'm hard as fuck from her seduction game at the bar.
"Is that?"
Tessa stops in her tracks near the front of the club. Black hair, styled to stick up wildly, peeks through the crowd. I would have sworn my paranoia was causing me to hallucinate if she hadn't seen him too.
"Why the fuck is he here? Did you tell him you were coming to the club?"
I hiss. I've kept my cool all night, only to have it sabotaged by this asshole.
"No, of course not,"
Tessa exclaims, defending herself. I can tell by her wide eyes that she's being honest. Zed spots us, and a mischievous frown takes over his face. Being the fucking instigator that he is, he walks over to where we're standing.
"What are you doing here?"
I ask him as he approaches.
"Same thing as you."
He rolls his shoulders and looks at Tessa. I fight the urge to pull the top of her dress up and knock his teeth out.
"How did you know she was here?"
I ask him. Tessa tugs at my arm and looks back and forth between Zed and me.
"I didn't. I'm here to watch the band."
A man with the same tanned skin as Zed joins us.
"You should go,"
I tell the two of them.
"Harden, please,"
Tessa whines behind me.
"Don't,"
I whisper to her. "I've had enough of Zed and his shit."
"Hey,"
the man moves to stand between us.
"They're doing another set. Let's go tell them we're here."
"You know Soto?"
Tessa asks.
"Damn it, Tessa."
"Yeah, we do,"
the stranger says. I can practically see the conspiracy theories floating through her mind about how these people know each other. But just wanting to be away from Zed, I take her by the arm and guide us to the door.
"See you around,"
Zed says, giving Tessa his best, "I'm a lost fucking puppy and I want you to feel bad for me and love me because I'm a pathetic fuck" smile, before following the other guy toward the stage. I rush out the door and into the cold air. Tessa follows closely behind, insisting,
"I didn't know he was coming here, I swear."
I unlock the car and open the passenger door for her.
I know,"
I say to silence her. I'm trying my best to talk myself down from going back inside.
"Drop it, please. I don't want to ruin the night."
I walk around to the other side of the car and slide in next to her.
"Okay,"
she agrees, nodding.
"Thank you,"
I sigh. I slip the key into the ignition, and Tessa puts her hand on my cheek to turn my head toward her.
"I really appreciate you making such an effort tonight. I know it's hard for you, but it means the world to me."
As she utters her words of praise, I smile against her palm.
"Okay,"
I mean it. I love you, Harden. So much.
I tell her how much I love her, while she climbs across the console and straddles my lap. Her hands are quick to undo my jeans and tuck them down just enough. Her mouth is quick against my neck, and she pulls at my shirt, popping the top two buttons off in a rushed attempt to gain access to my chest. I push her dress up to expose her tight little body to me, and she digs into my back pocket to retrieve the condom that I suspected I would need.
I only want you, always,
she reassures me, calming my racing mind as she slides the condom onto me. I grip her hips and help lift her body. In the small space of the car, it feels closer, deeper, as she lowers herself onto me. As I fill her, completely and possessively, a low hiss escapes my mouth. She covers my lips, swallowing my moan as she moves her hips slowly, the way she did in the club. I'm so fucking deep this way, I say, taking her bun in my hand and tugging gently to force her to look at me.
So good,
she groans, taking me inside her, feeling every inch of me. One of her hands moves to my hair while the other rests at the base of my throat. She's so fucking sexy this way, when alcohol is laced with adrenaline and she's full of hunger and need. Need for me, for my body, for this raw, passionate connection that only we share. She couldn't find this with anyone else, and neither could I. I have everything I need here with her, and she can't ever leave me. Fuck, I love you. I breathe into her mouth as she tugs at my hair and her fingers tighten on my neck. It's not uncomfortable. It's fairly light pressure, but it's driving me fucking insane.
I love you,
she gasps, when I lift my hips to meet her, thrusting harder than before. I stare at her and revel in the sensation of her flexing her hips. The slow building of pleasure begins at the base of my spine, and I can feel Tessa tensing as I continue to aid her by lifting my hips with each thrust. She has got to get on the pill. I need to feel her skin to skin again. I can't wait to be inside you without a condom, I say into her neck.
Keep going,
she urges me. She loves my dirty mouth.
I want you to feel me come inside you.
I suck at the salty skin of her collarbone, tasting the thin layer of sweat there.
You'll fucking love it, won't you? Me marking you that way?
The thought alone pushes me over the edge.
I'm almost,
she moans, and with one harsh tug at my hair, we ride out our highs together, panting and moaning and messy and us. I help her off of my lap and roll down the window while she adjusts her dress.
What are you?
She begins, and I toss the condom out the window.
You did not just throw a dirty condom out of the window. What if Christian sees it?
I smile evilly at her. I'm sure it won't be the only condom he finds in this lot. Her hands fumble with my zipper, helping me dress again so I can drive.
Maybe not.
She scrunches her nose and looks out the window as I put the car into gear.
It smells like sex in here,
she adds, and bursts into laughter. I nod and listen to her hum along to every single fucking song on the radio as we drive back to Vance's place. I almost tease her for it, but it's actually sort of a lovely sound, especially after listening to that shitty, shitty band play. Lovely sound. I'm even starting to talk like her.
I'm going to have to physically remove my eardrums after tonight,
I remark as she carries on. She sticks her tongue out at me like a child and sings even louder. I take Tessa's hand in mine to steady her as we walk up to the driveway en route to the front door. The way she's acting, I'm guessing most of that champagne finally hit her liver.
What if we're locked out?
She asks with a giggle when we reach the driveway.
The babysitter is here, I remind her.
Oh, yeah, Lillian,
she smiles.
She's so nice.
I grin at the level of her intoxication. I thought you didn't like her.
I do, now that I know she doesn't like you the way you led me to believe she did.